sounded fucked up, but the recording and everybody listening, it sounds fine. This is Pure Decking for July the 7th, 2016. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like our current police state, information security, and fucking up the intro. You know, like fucking up the intro like it's I Have Nothing. I'm Morps, and tonight we have RU486. RU486, what are you drinking?
I'm nothing. I'm rationing down to air at the moment, as I've spent every last cent I had the last couple of weeks on new hardware.
And Madman. Madman, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking Angry Orchard Summer Honey.
Nice. So, I'm actually slumming it a little bit this week. I picked up some Budweiser Black Crown, really just to try it. And it's a... You know, it's not terrible.
I don't know why you guys hate on Budweiser. I like it.
I don't like the regular stuff, but this stuff's drinkable. I mean, it's not bad. It's not not the greatest stuff in the world, but it's...
It'll get you pissed.
It'll get you pissed. So, a little bit of some concepts I'm throwing around for the station right now, actually. I thought it might be worth discussing. Of course, I'm going to try to revamp the webpage again for whatever version number we're up to for the web page. I think I'm going to actually go for just like a simple black with a transparent menu and logo on it. And just to say fuck the fancy themes. Let's just go for something simple, clean.
Yeah, we can just get the domain to 404. Simple as.
Yeah, I can do that. And how long did I run the station on the beta site versus the real site? So, you know, it's just like, yeah, you know, the show's still going. We're just updating the wrong webpage. So, you know, God knows we've done that. But I was thinking it'd be worth revamping the website, and maybe I don't know. I was thinking it might be worth putting together a couple of guides on the website to maybe how we do some of the content, how to produce some things, maybe get a little bit of help and do some articles on the proper audio, music production. Like some of the stuff Big's playing with, you know, I've been playing around with for a few years myself. If Tack would still talk to us, get him to help us out. But I don't know if he'll even listen to us anymore. So
I tell you, what really good is a etiquette guide on mics in game.
Oh,
that
yeah,
would be fantastic.
Yeah. So, you
know? Push to talk or make your sound settings correct so we don't hear you breathing,
or your fans spinning. Or your mom bitching at you in the background. Or your sisters fighting.
Just getting your levels right and how to set all that up. Yeah, stuff like that. I mean, hell, we've been doing this shit long enough. We know how to do it. And, you know, setting up for recording and shit like that. And it's a little bit self-serving because I was kind of hoping if we drive a little bit of traffic to the site with some articles on how to do some of this shit, we might get some people sending us some content to put on the stream.
Yes, we can take a break.
So I'm open to getting some new blood on the station, as it were. I wouldn't mind helping get some people going if it gets us some more shows. Because I mean, we've been kind of limping along with Decking Alone for a while now, and even that's been kind of limping. So I'm not quite sure what I want to do with the station, but I know I don't want it to stop. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
I'm happy just pushing out one show a week.
Well, that's the thing.
I just say, man, we do it for us, not for anyone else.
Well, that's the thing. But if we can get some other people pushing out shows, hey, more content, and we still only have to do one a week. So that's the goal. So I don't know, just some ideas I'm toying around with. Thought I'd see if anybody had any concepts on that. If anybody does, at galaxy15radio.com. Not that I ever look at it. Messaging me on Reddit would probably be the quickest way to do it. Of course, it warps. I never bothered to set up Madman an email address. I thought we were going to set him up with complaints at galaxy15radio.com.
He is the complaints department.
Yeah. I was just like, oh, you're bitching about something. Fucking amazing.
But yeah, we haven't gotten around to doing that. And I got some other shit to do for the station, but I wouldn't mind doing some of the automation stuff I would have to do to open it up to get some new people going, if it actually got new people going, you know what I mean? That's the real question, is if I go through all the work to build it, will anybody actually use it?
It would need to have an advantage possibly over YouTube, or we just get fringe people that don't want to be censored on here, which would be really cool.
Well, I going back and forth on whether I want to do anything on YouTube or not. And the way their content system is, the way you can get videos, mass complaints if you've offended somebody, and you know they change their policy to where if you're saying something hurtful about someone, you can be considered. And it's like, how the fuck do you even define that, right? It's like, oh no, they've offended me. What did they do? They insulted penguins. I don't know, man.
The reason they're not defining it is because it can't be defined. That's why you just let people speak. They said something stupid, someone will come up and say, hey, you're a fucktard. Stop being stupid.
Well, I mean, the only real defining, I guess, genre we've ever labeled on Galaxy 15 is cyberpunk. And that's about it. So, what the fuck's that, right? In your politics, it's anything.
Pretty much.
I don't know. I'm just throwing around ideas.
There's only two rules. No kiddie porn and no fucking death threats to the President of the United States. Apart from that, have at it.
Well, with the death threats thing, we've kind of failed at.
I don't remember ever saying I'm going to shoot the President. I may have said the President should have been shot. That's suggesting. That's not actually opening threatening. I know it's semantics, but I believe in technically correct is the best kind of correct.
I believe it's called a performative. But, Anyways. So, let's move on to the discussion story here for tonight, just because, it is amazing. Throw the link out here. It's from techspot.com. The headline alone says it all. NSA classifies Linux Journal readers. Tor entails Linux users as extremists. If you're not using an operating system, they don't have a back door to.
Wow.
I kind of want them to add Puppy Linux, because I still have that on a thumb drive.
Let's see. Are you a Linux Journal reader, or do you use software such as Tor and Tails? If so, you've been flagged as an extremist by the NSA. Leaked documents related to X-Key score snooping reveal that the agency is targeting anyone who is interested in online privacy, specifically those who use the aforementioned software and visit the Linux community website. X-Key score is a collection of analytics software that was among a number of surveillance revealed by Edward Snowden. Its source code is a rule file which is being analyzed by members of the Tor project and security specialists for German broadcasters NDR and WDR. Identifies two German Tor directory authority servers as being under surveillance by the NSA. Well, the fact that they're German Tor servers might have something to do with it, because the NSA runs a whole bunch of them themselves. I think they're monitoring those too, but the NSA runs Tor exit nodes.
Wasn't the FBI running the largest child pornography website at one point?
For several weeks, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Playpen.
That was going to pay some salaries. Offset our debt.
A bit of the pot calling the kettle black there. You know what I mean?
So, months of investigating by the German public television, blah, 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 blah. Countries like Canada, the UK, New Zealand, Australia, and the US, also known as the Five Eyes, are exempt from surveillance.
Goddamn Hydra.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, bullshit. They're surveilling. They're just not acknowledging. Apart from Linux Journal, other monitored websites include privacy.il, freeproxies.org, Hotspot Shield, Megaproxy, Freenet, Centurion, and an anonymous email service called MixMinion. No word about how the source code was obtained. Security experts aren't sure whether it was leaked by Snowden. Blah, blah, blah. So basically, the NSA, at least in the Snowden links, was actively monitoring they were keeping up with the game of, you know, the privacy, especially on the Linux side of things, and monitoring these websites and these Tor nodes. And yeah, if you were using Linux for more than just, you know, web servers and development, you were labeled as an extremist.
Hey, we're both in the same camp now, Morps.
Damn it! It's like, are you kidding me?
You were paying with credit card and keeping your curtains open, thinking you wouldn't get on a list.
Oh, I knew I was on lists. Let's be real. I'm a network security guy. I'm on lists. It doesn't matter whether they think I've ever actually done anything or not. just my profession means I'm on lists.
Yeah.
Is it that bad, though? It is kind of profiling, and I'm pro-profiling. It's just, what are they profiling?
Well, just because... So, if they only were monitoring it... I mean, yeah, they've labeled it extremists, and the article's kind of expanded into that. I don't actually blame them for monitoring this stuff. I really don't. And because if you're trying to look for bad guys on the internet, that's where you go. You go to the tools that are popular but used to hide. Were they monitoring some of the more esoteric ones? Probably not. I mean, Tor is the big one. That's why they were going to it, is because it's the one people talk about on the news. It's the one you hear about. It's the one idiots who think they're going to be lead hacksaws go to when they, you know, I don't know, want to look at pictures of kids or read up on how to, you know, supposedly how to hack or something. I don't know, half the shit on Tor isn't as good as the real you go to some of the real forums out there, man, they're not on Tor. They don't bother.
Hacking in and of itself isn't illegal. You're looking at, how do I secure a network? What bugs are out there? Just go to the company's forums and read those.
I've explored some of the forums on Tor for some of the different hacking boards on Tor. You get better shit off the SANS website and YouTube, dude. You really do. You just have to be smart enough to understand what the people who are showing you this are talking about. Because you go on Hackboard, or what was the damn thing called? DarkBB or something like that. And it's like, oh, here's how you steal credit cards. And you know, I talk about running a Metasploit module to get into a box or finding somebody's fucking VNC server. And you know, once you're in, what do you do to, you know, wait for or go get it out of their browser history? So they're talking about doing the same things. It's just the examples of what to do. Because you go on YouTube and it's like, well, here's how you use this Metasploit module. And they'll have some virtual machine they've set up and they just get into it. And they don't show you any post exploitation or what to do with it. They just
you're doing it wrong. Get yourself one of the mobile card machines, you know, the ones that they have in shops and stuff that are battery run. enter the price $69.95, put it in your pocket and bump into people on public transport. Paywave.
That's not where I thought you were going. That's okay.
It totally works, man.
Oh, I'm sure it... Excuse me.
And that's why people are selling shielded wallets now.
Whoops is dying.
Yep. Madman might really be running this station. But I don't know, man. I don't blame them for monitoring that stuff. But just outright labeling anyone who's interested in privacy as an extremist? I mean...
Yeah. That's the labeling I reject.
Let's be really real here. The reason I go for all this privacy crap is because I think it's fun. It has nothing to do with real or with perceived or even, you know, real or perceived threats against me. I mean, yeah, I joke about being on lists and doing shit, but I mean, okay, I do information security for a living. I have engineer in my job title, and you know, so yeah, there's a little bit going on. Do I have really anybody snooping me? No. But it's fun.
It's curiosity. That's why I do it. I'm just curious.
So, it's like, you know, how can I set up the most extreme system to be certain that nobody's fucking with me, you know? It has nothing to do with, do I think anybody's trying to actively fuck with me? Because if I thought somebody was actively trying to fuck with me, I would be solving that problem in different ways. But
shut it down, walk away.
Well, if I thought somebody was fucking with somebody through G15 or family through G15, I would.
Mm-hmm.
But if it was somebody local and I thought they were going to try to do something, well...
That's what they don't, 12 gauge is for.
Well, they'd get one chance. So, But that has to be more serious than just stupid pranking, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
I do see the labeling as extremist is bad, but they should monitor it. My only problem is the whole let's record the entire internet, go to places where you have reason to suspect someone. Wait till they do something stupid and then build your case from there. My only problem with the NSA is they want to watch everyone. Don't watch everyone.
Well, the NSA is not interested in preventing crime. The NSA is not interested in tracking down drug dealers. I mean, sure, they pass information off to the FBI, but that's just to look good. They're interested in obtaining information for blackmailing politicians. Let's be real.
Then you don't need to look at the entire internet. That narrows it down to even fewer people. You see, who's the current prime minister of whatever the fuck country? Let's do some Google dorking. What are his interests? Okay, let's start watching those sites. You can narrow it down to fish for the particular people you want to fish for. My problem is looking for everyone. There's not a reason to look for me. Get a warrant if you want to look at my shit. My entire argument. You'll save some time, you'll save some money, you'll get some better information to blackmail foreign diplomats, or possibly catch some people before they murder us, or others.
Oh, they don't want to save money, man. That's a misconception.
But if you use your resources responsibly, you can do more things with those resources.
They don't want to be responsible, you know that. That's why they want to monitor the internet.
They could monitor the internet and build a drone fleet instead of just monitor the internet.
I don't know. I don't disagree with you. I just think it's sad, truthfully. I mean, it doesn't help. It does not help at all.
I just think the inflammatory language of the authorities.
Yeah, when they're going in there and saying, oh, you're an extremist, well, that has connotations. And there are rules about how they can interact with people that have been labeled extremists. So, you know, the fact that some computer nerd is interested in privacy, and I use computer nerd lovingly because I am one, doesn't mean that they can then, you know, search their house without a warrant, Guantanamo Bay their ass and waterboard them, right? Because what have they done? They've done nothing. They've just tried to, you know, understand how the internet works and play games, right? So, like, what are they doing? They're talking shit on 4chan. Great. Who the fuck cares? I mean, seriously.
Tumblr.
We know the score on that one, don't we?
I haven't seen if they've updated the scoreboard recently or not.
I think it's still 2-0.
I thought it'd be more.
Oh, that's dark. That was dark. So, anyways, though, so I don't know. It seems like a lot of excuses. You know what I mean? Just to be able to build databases and not actually do, say, police work, or, you know, actively trying to look for things that are real. I mean, yeah, looking on Tor is a good place to look if you're trying to catch, I don't know, drug dealers, international shit. I mean, you do have people who claim to be assassins on some of the Tor boards. But, you know, I don't know how much stock I actually put in that. I kind of figure if you're an assassin, you're not advertising outside of a very certain clientele. So,
if you're a good assassin, you don't need to advertise.
So, and there's that. So...
They're trying to break into the business.
Yeah, because that always ends well. Pretty certain that's how those are the ones that get caught, is the ones that are trying to break into the business.
I don't know. That's also how MS-13 started.
Yeah.
There are always the idiots that fail, and then there's the Walmarts of the world.
Speaking of the Walmarts of the world, Madman, as a subject matter expert, how long do you think a body dressed up like a homeless person and left in a shopping cart at the back end of a Walmart would last?
Oh, God. Depends on which part of the back end of the building. I could say upwards of 2 weeks.
Okay. I win the bet. Thank you. I was just curious. I'm finishing a conversation I was having at work earlier today. Yeah, a couple of the sysads and I were going at it with that and making another cis admin who's kind of quiet really uncomfortable.
You'd have a better chance of sticking them in a car and leaving them at the end of the parking lot. Especially in winter.
Yeah, but then you gotta leave a car.
Yeah.
So. Anyways, let's go on to the next story here. This one is from, let's say, to annoy Suave, Reuters.
Reuters!
Robo Reuters. Reuters. Security company Avast Software said it would buy Dutch rival AVG Technologies for $1.3 billion in cash to expand its presence into the emerging markets. Avast said it will pay $25 per AVG share, representing a 33% premium to AVG stock's closing price on Wednesday. We believe that joining forces with Avast, a private company with significant resources, fully supports our growth and objectives and represents the best interests of our stockholders, AVG Chief Executive Gary Kovacs said in a statement. Avast, which provides free and paid software for personal computers and mobile devices to businesses and individuals, has more than 230 million users worldwide. Company plans on to fund the transaction using cash on hand and debt financing. Avast has, so they're borrowing money to do this. Avast has received financial commitments of $1.685 billion from SUSE Securities, Jefferies, and UBS Investment Bank. They are borrowing money to do this. One free antivirus is buying the other free antivirus, and they're borrowing money to do it.
Wow.
So, I don't know. Everybody's used AVG or Avast at some point, but...
I was told that it's kind of low par now, not too
it
anymore.
Is. I mean, so here's the thing with both of them. Ever since Microsoft started putting out their free antivirus that's, you know, works as well as either one of those and is pretty much included in Windows nowadays, hasn't been a need for either one of them. So unless you're actually paying for AVG or Avast, which some people do, I guess I have a hard time seeing the business model, but there are a lot of people who pay for this shit, so...
Is their paid version pretty good?
It's not bad. I mean, it's an antivirus. I mean, all antiviruses are terrible. You know my long-standing stance on that one. But...
Then you install six of them, and you'll have six times the chance of the antivirus catching the virus.
And absolutely no chance of getting anything done.
Drive to Mad Men's place and smack him.
Well, I'm going to see him in a couple of weeks.
Give him a little slap around the back of the head for that one.
Yeah.
Six antiviruses. Everyone knows the magic number is seven.
It was kind of an inside joke of an accidental install.
Yeah. So if anybody's ever put more than one antivirus on their system, it's quite comical. Because what will happen is they will start detecting each other's signatures as a threat and start quarantining each other. They then start seeing each other's quarantines as a threat.
Eventually your computer crashes.
Well, it's the equivalent of installing the Middle East on your hard drive.
It really only escalates. It really only does. It is quite comical. It's great fun to watch and see. McAfee and Symantec, both on the same box, lose their shit. Windows Defender usually is smart enough to back off and shut down if it sees another antivirus. Avast and AVG actually both seemed to play okay last time I tested them out, both having Symantec or being on the same box as Symantec. The machine runs like ass, but you could argue that's just because Symantec's on it. So, I mean, but yeah, it's they at least performed a little bit better. But yeah, you really don't want multiple antiviruses running at the same time on a machine. Let's say that. Because, I mean, you can put multiple AV tools, but... Alright, well, let's move on here.
I wonder what their income is annually to justify that much of a buyout.
You know, it's probably more than we give them credit for, because they do both offer paid products. And last time I looked at Avast, I have not looked at AVG in years. Last time I looked at Avast, their free product does nothing but try to upsell you on the paid product. So you're basically installing one of the fake antiviruses at that point, because all it does is upsell you. But you're constantly cocking up saying, you could be paying us money. You could be giving us money. Why aren't you giving us money?
Yeah, AVG does.
It's the Komodo does the same thing for their free one.
Yeah, AVG is the equivalent of like one of those mall beggars. You know, you can ignore it. You just keep it ignoring it, and you don't have to give it any money. And
well, the problem with AVG is they've got this toolbar that basically is malware at this point. So
you don't have to install a toolbar, though.
Yeah,
you just have to click the "Don't install" box rather than the install box. I hate that, needing to opt out of things. So pisses me off.
No. But yeah, I mean, it's and I think they both do mobile Android anti-malware scanners as well, which probably makes them more money than anything. So maybe they've got commercial offerings. I've honestly never looked to see if they offer companies like managed enterprise endpoint. They might. So anyways, next one up is from Ars Technica, staying on the virus bandwagon here. 10 million Android phones infected by the all-powerful auto-rooting apps. I wonder where they got the count. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's pretty rounded number.
Security experts have documented a disturbing spike in particularly virulent family of Android malware, with more than 10 million handsets infected and 286,000 of them in the United States. Researchers from security firm Checkpoint Software said that the malware installs more than 50,000 fraudulent apps each day, displays 20 million malicious advertisements, and generates more than $300,000 per month in revenue. That is a hell of a business model.
Yeah.
You guys are getting the Android malware shit. This success is largely the result of the malware's ability to silently root a large percentage of the phones it infects by exploiting vulnerabilities that remain unfixed in older versions of Android. The Checkpoint researchers have dubbed the malware family Hummingbird. The researchers from mobile security company Lookout say Hummingbird is in fact Shedun, a family of auto-rooting malware that came to light last November and have already infected a large number of devices. This may not be the malware kit I thought I was reading about earlier. The one I was reading about earlier, I thought was this one, but it may not be. The one earlier, it masquerades as a advertising service for developers, and that's how they were distributing it. Was it's like, oh no, install this library, it'll display ads, and you'll get paid. And the library was actually, the library was actually the malware, and yeah, it display ads all right. So.
Wow.
But let's see. For the past 5 months, Checkpoint researchers have quietly observed the China-based advertising company behind Hummingbird in several ways, including by infiltrating the command and control servers it uses. The researchers say the malware uses the unusually tight control it gains over infected devices to create windfall profits and steadily increase its numbers. Hummingbad, not Hummingbird. I've been reading that wrong all day. Hummingbad does this by silently installing promoted apps on infected phones, defrauding legitimate mobile advertisers, and creating fraudulent statistics inside the official Google Play Store. Accessing the devices and their sensitive data creates new and steady stream of revenue for the cybercriminals, Checkpoint researchers wrote in a recently published report. Emboldened by financial and technological independence, their skill sets will advance putting end users, enterprises, and government agencies at risk. So it's drive-by downloads. Usually with Android, though, it's snuck in as part of an app. You install something and it sneaks in with it. So, yeah.
I just like the pie chart. China has been infected.
China is an infection. Yeah, yes, it has. But the next pie chart down, Android victims by Android version. Half of them are on KitKat, half of them on Jelly Bean. Nobody is I don't see the current version on here. So,
ice cream sandwich? God, I kind of want to go get some junk food.
Well, Android was naming themselves after junk food for a long time. Ice cream sandwich is old-ass version. What's
Oh god, let me see what am I running.
I can't remember what version I'm running. Let's see, this is Marshmallow. Marshmallow, 1%. So they actually are managing to get modern devices, but they're probably earlier builds, so
I hit update a couple months ago. Yeah, I don't hit that button very often, but I also don't use my phone to browse the internet.
So, if you're doing anything more than, you know, like your email with your Android phone, it really does pay to keep up to date or grab custom ROMs to try to keep up or go get AVG for.
Where's a good place to get custom ROMs for your phone? Because whenever you go custom ROM,
XDA developer.
Isn't that usually a way of getting malware on your phone?
You know, honestly, I have not seen much. You'd think there would have been, right? But I haven't seen that much in the way of ROMs that are pre-owned. In fact, I'm not certain I've ever seen one. I usually go to XDA to start looking for custom ROMs for devices. Now, that said, I've not done anything on my S7 as far as putting custom ROMs on it. I usually run the stock for, I don't know, 6 months or so before I get bored with it and start doing that. It's also kind of like, well, I don't want to. It takes a little while before you like, okay, it's time to start fucking around with some of these. But there's all kinds of different ROMs out there, and Cycros is losing his mind in the chat room because I'm not mentioning, you know, rooting your device and doing it before the malware does, which you can certainly do that, and then there's some nice rooted applications for really putting some good controls in on your system. But probably the biggest thing you can do, at least on modern Androids, some of the older ones, they don't really do a good job, but modern ones, whenever you install an app, it comes up with a screen and says, this application is going to be able to read your contacts, make phone calls, read your email, access the internet, take a shit, and, you know, everything else that this app claims it's going to be able to access and do. And I have canceled apps because it's like, oh, this game looks like fun. Why does it need my contacts? I have canceled, you know, not bought apps and not installed them because it comes up and starts asking for the ability to look at your messages and the ability to do all that stuff. So I won't install the app if it's asking for more than I think it really needs. There's no reason in the world for a little, you know, knockoff Mario game to need to read my contacts. There is absolutely no reason in the world for a flashlight app to need to be able to make phone calls. And what's really fun was, what was the game?
Candy Crush asked for that.
Candy Crush wanted your contacts?
Yeah. If you get likes on Facebook or something, you got free plays instead of the pay.
Huh. But, Cycros is saying, talk about the exposed framework. You know, I haven't played with that much in a long time. I did play with it on my S3, which one of these days, I've got the screen for it. I just haven't gotten around to actually fixing it. So, at some point, I'll probably just take pity on Madman and say, here, use a decent phone after I fix it.
The only reason I have a smartphone at all was for Ingress. And now I occasionally use the GPS if I'm going into a town I've never been in before.
So, anyways. But, yeah, in all seriousness, sure, if you want to go rooting your phone, playing with some of the different frameworks and putting some good custom controls in, great. If you don't know what you're doing, just read what the fucking apps are asking for. And if they're asking for something that doesn't make sense, why does the calendar widget for my home screen need the ability to make SMSs? Is that a feature of the app? No. Then why is it in there? My absolute favorite was I was looking at a news reading application that claimed it was for security news, and it wanted the ability to install other applications. Nip! That was all kinds of nip! So, you know, just pay attention. Don't just click yes when you're installing something. Look at what the app is asking, and if it's asking for things that are weird, don't install it. Like, oh, but I want to play Candy Crush. No, you don't.
Everybody wants to play Candy Crush.
If you want to play Candy Crush, just understand that it's going to suck everything off your phone and send it up to advertisers. And
but I
want to
play
okay
all of
that.
The original Nintendo ROMs on my phone.
Mm-hmm. You can absolutely do that. Admittedly, touchscreen controls for NES games, yeah, kind of iffy. But on an Android, at least, you can put a Bluetooth gamepad on there. It plays pretty nice. Actually, the one I bought for using my VR headset works great for a little SNES emulator I was playing with on there because the phone clips into it. So, anyways. Next story up is from Petapixel. It's a photographer.
Oh, God, that sounds horrible.
That's an unfortunate name.
It is an unfortunate name, but apparently it's a photography blog. If you are a photographer shooting with the iFi's older generation Wi-Fi memory cards, here's something you should know. Your card will soon become more or less useless. Just days after it announced that it had sold its cloud services to Ricoh, iFi sent out an email to customers this week, informing them that older X1 and X2 cards, basically everything prior to the current Mobi line, now have an end-of-life date of September 16, 2016. These are SD cards with a little Wi-Fi chip in them. And they're going to send out an update to brick them.
Wow.
I mean, literally, it's not that there's anything wrong with them. They are literally just going to brick them. The newspaper particularly frustrating for photographers who purchased an iFi memory card not too long ago. iFi began phasing out sales of the X2 product line in 2012, iFi explains on its FAQ. Just because they quit selling it a few years ago doesn't mean that you have the right to break it.
That's
don't
bullshit,
break
man.
It, you just stop supporting it.
Exactly.
The last version produced by the company were sold through authorized channels in the United States in March of 2015. Oh, so it's more than a year since you sold one. Doesn't matter. Just because I sell you something doesn't give me the right to break into your house and destroy it later just to force you to buy a new version.
Oh, wait till I start doing this with cars.
Yeah, no shit, right? After September 16th, you will no longer be able to create an iFi Center account, which was required by X1 and X2 cards. Oh, I guess to connect to them, you have to go through their web-based GUI.
Oh, that just makes that terrible. What you do is you push an update where you don't need to do that anymore.
Yeah, you just connect to the damn thing. Certain functions of your X2 card, such as direct mode, may continue to function beyond the end of life date, but you'll need to set it up prior to that. Selective transfer will also function if enabled early, but relay transfer will cease to function. iFi software used by older cards will also no longer be updated or supported. There's absolutely no guarantee that critical features will continue to work. It's rather unusual for products such as Wi-Fi cards to be bricked completely by the manufacturer, and some photographers are understandably upset about the news. One frustrated customer posted an open letter on Hacker News. Receiving your email about removing support for X2 cards this morning has made me furious, the author writes, that your company would have the gall to sell cards that would be obsolete within a few years is preposterous. Obviously, they've not looked at the Apple business model. I would have updated the Mobi cards in time anyways, but out of principle, I will avoid iFi products in the future, blah, 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 blah. iFi says the reason for the end of life is that the older Wi-Fi and encryption technologies are no longer safe and appropriate, so they're dropping support and forcing photographers to move to its newer products with newer technologies.
But so that doesn't involve bricking the old shit.
Well, I mean, from a security standpoint, if it's not supporting the new SSL, why... maybe I'm misunderstanding how these things work, but if it's a Wi-Fi enabled SD card, I'm assuming you would run a program on your desktop to receive the photos as you take them. Why does that ever need to leave my network? If it doesn't leave my network, I'm not as concerned about you using older SSL. So obviously it has to go out to their cloud, upload all of your pictures to their cloud, and then you pull it back in that way, which is a shit design in the first place. Because photos are not small. Anybody who's worked with high-end cameras knows this. You don't want to have to move the whole damn thing up to the internet and then back down.
Don't use your phone. Use your data for the month.
Oh,
and the next year.
Yeah. For photographers wishing to switch to the newer iFi cards, iFi is offering a 20% discount for up to 3 units. So, yeah, I 20% or not, I wouldn't buy them.
It's how long before you brick this one? The first lasted me a year. I think I'm just going to have an SD card that can be pulled from my camera, stuck into my computer, and downloaded. It takes all of, what, a minute and a half?
They're not setting a good precedence here for a business model of supporting stuff towards the future.
That's for damn sure. Well, I mean, some devices, it is kind of a pain in the ass to get to the SD card. For example, I mentioned I have an S7. I got yanked. The SD card and the SIM card are on the same little tray. So if I want to take just the memory card out, I have to actually pop the SIM card out, which, of course, the phone freaks out when you do that. But
one second here, Morse. Those SD cards were automatically sending photos up to the cloud, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay, I could see where this, for some photojournalists, is a good thing. Especially if you're covering horse racing, because from what I understand is you actually place your camera out on the inside of the track the day before, and it sits out there for a couple of days during the racing, and you can get those photos every day, so you don't actually have to physically be able to touch the camera. I could see where that card would be good.
Oh no, it's a fantastic concept. It's a way of putting Wi-Fi in a camera.
Yeah. Why don't you just have a Wi-Fi-enabled camera?
So, hey, are you that shooter story we were talking about earlier? Iron Angel's got a live stream of it right now, so they're... Maybe we'll get that link to the chat for Are You There.
I'm watching it myself right now. Is it the Fox 5 one he's got, or has he got an on-the-ground one?
He hasn't thrown the link out yet. So I guess we should mention that, yeah, there's an active shooter situation in Dallas right now. I don't like getting into this shit because we're not that kind of news show.
No.
We're pointing and laughing at stupid technology companies.
It just seems lately on Pure Decking that something breaks really big as we're doing a show and I get sidetracked.
Yeah.
I do want to point out, total shootings are actually down even when you take into account mass shootings in the country for anyone that's big gun control.
Our definition of mass shootings in this country is kind of fucked up. Like, more than 2 people getting shot is considered a mass shooting. I would assume a mass shooting would be, like, more than 5 at least, but I don't know.
A mass shooting, you should have to be able to beat the previous high score, which is Brandon Vick.
I want to implement that now. To use the phrase mass shooting, you must beat the previous high score. Taking a drink. So technology companies should not be able to brick my shit.
No, they shouldn't. But imagine if the car industry did that.
Yeah. If you're going to sell a device that's dependent on a cloud service, you got to support it for a decent length of time. 1 year is not enough. And if it's like, oh, well, we got to... Yeah, that's what I said.
Of course
it's Apple. That's iFi. But, I mean, shit. I kind of hope... I haven't looked into it, but I kind of hope some of the newer DSLR and cameras are just putting Wi-Fi in anyways. So, like, defeat the need for the thing. I've seen a lot of cameras that they hook up to, like, Android tablets. So I imagine it couldn't be too hard to piggyback a phone or something on there and replicate the functionality anyways. So,
well, those cameras are fucking huge if they're the ones I'm thinking of. And they're not cheap either.
The ones I've seen can get pretty small, and they stick them on drones for racing. Transmit right to your phone.
Yep. So, this next one is from Ars Technica. It is not related to shooting, but it is hilarious. Did I just imply that mass shootings are hilarious?
Yes, you did.
Only if you're trying to beat the previous high score.
Okay. Rocket Snail is the correct answer there. TP-Link has forgotten to register some domain names. And the domain's new owners want $2.5 million to give it back. It is common with many in common with many other vendors, TP-Link is one of the world's biggest sellers of Wi-Fi access points and home routers, and it has a domain that owners of the hardware can use to quickly get their router's configuration page. Unlike most other vendors, however, it appears that TP-Link has failed to renew its registration for the domain, leaving it available for anyone to buy. And any owner of the domain could feasibly use it for fake administration pages to fish credentials or upload bugger's firmware. This omission was spotted by Adam A. Dan, CEO of Cybermoon, and posted bug track mailing list last week. Two domain names used by TP-Link appear to be affected. TP-Link login.net was used, according to TP-Link, on devices sold until 2014. On initial setup, the router's internet connection is still offline. The domain name will be trapped automatically and correctly in the router's configuration page. Subsequent visits to the configuration page can still use the real-time internet DNS system to resolve the address, hence those routers are susceptible to being hijacked. Who the hell came up with this idea of saying, oh, go to this website to configure your router? That is such a bad idea. The other one was tplinkextender.net. And so when somebody noticed them that these things were out, and apparently they get 4.4 million visits a month, domain name brokers bought it, and they want $2.5 million to get them back. Yeah, TP-Link stopped communicating with Dan after he reported it, and apparently they're going to put a note on their website, and that's about it.
Wow.
Whoops.
They kind of got their balls in a ringer. I think they need to buy that if their routers automatically route people to it, and you can't set it up without that link.
I think you probably can set it up with that link. It's more... who the hell came up with the idea of going to some random ass website to set up your router? 192.168.1.1. Come on, people.
I actually have that on a post-it note.
Mad man, really?
Tattoo it on the inside of your left arm.
Bother to remember it? No.
Tattoo it on the inside of your left arm, madman.
Yeah, I've done too much networking. The fact that I know IP space like that off the top of my head. Anyways, next article is from Torrid Freak and is interesting. Blizzard is suing Overwatch cheat maker for copyright infringement.
What?
Blizzard Entertainment is suing Bossland, the makers of the popular Overwatch cheat tool Watch Over Tyrant, and several other game cheats. Among other things, the developer accused the German company of various forms of copyright infringement and unfair competition. Over the years, video game developer Blizzard Entertainment has published many popular games. Most recently, the company released its new first-person shooter, Overwatch, which became an instant bestseller. The game received rave reviews and generated hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue during its first weeks on sale. While most Overwatch players stick to the rules, there's a small group that tries to game the system by using cheats such as Watch Over Tyrant. They play with an advantage over regular users. But what does the cheat do? I don't think the article actually says. Oh, there's a website here. I'll go look at it here in a minute. Blizzard is not happy with the Overwatch cheat and has filed a lawsuit against the German maker Bossland GmbH in a federal court in California. Bossland also sells cheats for various other titles, such as World of Warcraft, Diablo 3, and Heroes of the Storm. The game developer accused the cheat maker of various forms of copyright infringement, unfair competition, and violating DMCA's anti-circumvention provision. According to Blizzard, these bots and cheats also caused millions of dollars in lost sales because they ruined the games for many legitimate players.
And the cheat has a monthly subscription fee.
Does it?
Yeah, $12.95 for 1 month.
See hostiles name health, see friendlies name health, radar that shows you everybody. Does it have an aimbot? That's usually what pisses me off is the aimbotting.
I don't know, the see everybody, because I get a lot of my kills by flanking. It pissed me off. I hate it whenever a Hanzo's just shooting, or whenever a Widow uses her ultimate. It just ruins me for a bit.
Yeah. So, I mean, the argument that, oh, this is causing people not to buy the game, I don't know. That's weird because that argument gets shaky fast. Like, you know, Valve could argue that Blizzard releasing Overwatch is causing people not to play TF2. So,
TF2 just had a big update, didn't it?
I honestly couldn't tell you.
I think so. I see a lot of people playing it. It's still a fun game.
Defendant sale and distribution of the Boss Land hacks in the United States has caused Blizzard to lose millions or tens of millions of dollars of revenue and to suffer irreparable damage to its goodwill and reputation. Moreover, by releasing Overwatch cheats just days after the release of Overwatch, defendants are attempting to destroy or irreparably harm that game before it even has a chance to fully flourish. The Overwatch cheat has already become relatively popular in a short period of time. Well, duh. Thousands of players are reportedly using the tool, which enables them to display locations and health stats of hidden or obscured opponents. So it's a wall hack. Okay. Yeah, by developing cheats, Bossland is impinged on its copyright. I'm not sure how. The reason I wanted to talk about this is because I'm not certain what law they broke by making cheats for this game. I don't like that there are cheats for this game, because I play that game, and it pisses me off when I feel like people are cheating. But I'm not certain that it's illegal. I mean, it's not like it's a... I don't know, people deflating footballs.
It's...
Sorry.
Altering the game code, but I'm not sure...
I don't
if that's
know.
An actual violation of copyright.
Couldn't you just have your game account suspended?
Blizzard will actually ban your account for life if they catch you cheating. You have to buy the game again.
Yeah, they did that with the WoW also.
Yeah. So
and
I'm fine
with
very that
active,
too.
They have a very active anti-cheating setup in Blizzard. I like that about them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind that they're banning players for life because, I feel like that's an enforceable section of the EULA that you are in an online competitive game playing unfairly. You know, for games like StarCraft that have a single player mode, banning them for life for cheating, that's kind of sucky because then you can't play the single player game. But, if it's a multiplayer-only game, I kind of get that, you know?
Yeah.
Although it does suck if you spent $60 on the game to be banned because they think you're cheating. Especially if you're not. That would suck.
You can use mods and playing GTA 5 with single player, but you have to remove your mods if you're playing multiplayer.
Yeah.
Overwatch doesn't have a single player mode.
Then, yeah, it's not a problem. Banning them for life.
Yeah. Anyways, I need a theremin for this last one, but I don't have a theremin, so this is from Mother Nature Network, MNN. The development of bomb-sniffing cyborg locusts is officially
underway. Oh, dear
underway.
Jesus.
And the picture is horrible. They hot glued some chip to the back of this locust. It's like
locust
they got one of those big
matter.
Old grasshoppers. It's like one of them big old grasshoppers, too, and it's like hot glued on there. It's like, shit. I know it's just a bug, but I mean, it's like, that's kind of cruel to hot glue something to the bug, you know what I mean?
Depending on how freshly it's molted, that's an exoskeleton. Not a lot of pain nerves there.
That's a fair point. When sometime in the future you stand at your back door and lament the massive cloud of cyborg locusts that rule the world.
Wow.
Oh, fuck, I hate this alliteration. Cyborg locusts are officially a funded project from the Office of Naval Research. The agency recently awarded a team of engineers from Washington University in St. Louis $750,000 to transform the short-lived grasshoppers into bomb-sniffing military assets. Why the interest in a species that has been the bane of agriculture for centuries? Turns out that a sense of smell that makes locust swarms so efficient at tracking down meals also makes them the ideal candidates for rooting out chemicals used to make bombs. Why reinvent the wheel? Why not take advantage of the biological solution? Why not put a brain in the jar and make it into a computer? I mean, excuse me, I don't know where that came from. Team leader Baharani Rahman, associate professor of biomedical engineering at the School of Engineering and Applied Science, said in a statement, That is the philosophy here. Even the state-of-the-art miniaturized chemical sensing devices have a handful of sensors. On the other hand, if you look at insect antenna, where their chemical sensors are located, they have several hundreds of thousands of sensors in a variety of types. In order to harness the power of the antenna, Raman and her team need to surgically implant sensors into the locust's brain to record and interpret chemical signals. We can do a surgery on the locust and implant these electrodes in their brains, Raman told KMFUFM. Within a few hours, they can recover and they can walk and behave as if nothing had happened. Yep, we stuck this big old spike on the back of their head because we don't hear them talking. We don't think they're now retarded.
It doesn't seem any more retarded than the other bug. Of course, that
one. I don't know that this guy has a redneck accent, considering his name is not. His name is Indian, I think, but it just seems appropriate. The sensors would then be connected to a lightweight backpack that would decode information and send them wirelessly to a receiver. As for how the locusts might be used in the field, there are some intriguing possibilities. Back in 2013, Raman and his team showed that locusts could be trained to identify certain odors with near-instant accuracy. Things only live a few months. What good is training them? Yeah, there's your full-time job, locust trainer. After a few seconds, the requisite odor was introduced, the locust would be given a reward, initiating a kind of Plavolvian
response.
Yeah, that. While the results in the field would likely differ from those in the lab, training locusts to seek out certain chemical odors is one possibility. The other idea, but why do you need the sensor backpack if that's the case? I mean, you just go to where the locusts are swarming and blow it up because they're locusts, right? It's like, there's the locust ball, shoot it.
But is the locust ball swarming because there's a bomb there? Or is the locust ball swarming because there's a field of corn there, a field of wheat there, a field there, a bunch of grass there, a person there sweating, a salt lick? Yes, give them the fucking backpack so we know it's a bomb and not a locust being a fucking locust, because they swarm over everything.
The other idea involves something called biocompatible silk. In a nutshell, scientists would implant this material as a kind of tattoo on the wings. When a laser shines in the mark, it converts the light to a mild heat, effectively telling the insects to move left or right. So they would steer it with a laser and then look at the results from the backpack. Biocompatible silk method comes on the heels of successful flight of beetles using sensory implants. Instead of lasers, the researchers from the University of California at Berkeley wirelessly initiated pulses of electrical stimulation in the left or right optic lobes, and they have a video. Oh, man.
Anyone seeing Weekend of Bernie's with bugs?
Wow.
Oh, jeez. I mean, it's just like... I mean, I realize you got to start Ghost in the Shell somewhere, but really...
Ghost in the cricket, my friend. That's where all the bugs in your cyber brain are going to come from. The ghosts of long dead crickets.
Let's do this. Yo! Hadouken! Alright, so I've got two things for Digital Dojo tonight. The first is I've talked about it on Decking before, but I've actually been running it for the past several days on my ThinkPad. That I got off eBay for a steal, and the guy thought it was broken, and he's like, "Are you sure you want this? It's pretty messed up." Yes, it's fine. Yeah, it works fine. He just didn't know how to fix it. So yeah, I'm into this i5 ThinkPad for less than a Chromebook, and it just kicks ass. So I put Cubes OS on it. Now, what Cubes is it's a Linux distribution based off Xen. And Xen is, I guess you would say, the older version of KVM or maybe VMware. And Amazon actually uses Xen for AWS. So, I mean, it's not a defunct technology. It's just an older virtualization technology. And what Cubes does is you basically end up with a kind of a network inside of a Linux distro. So you have the root Linux, which is called the DOM 0 in Xen technology, which is, the bare metal. It's not really, but it's like a really deep conversation about how Zen works compared to other hypervisors. It's easiest just to say it's the one running the others. It's not technically accurate, but it's close enough for conversation. So that's the one that actually boots, right? And that runs KDE and is air-gapped from the rest. Like, it has no network connection. And it runs VMs for your firewall, for your router, and then it has templates, and then you can spin up VMs from those templates. And they are, with the exception of your home folder, not permanent. So if you spin up a work VM off of the Fedora template and then, say, install some software on it and reboot, that software is gone unless you saved it in your home folder. So you don't lose your documents that you saved in that VM, but you lose any changes. So the idea here is you could have one VM that you do all your banking in. So that browser is only ever used for your banking, and it's shut down when you're not using it. Any changes, so if you accidentally got malware in it, it wouldn't even be saved. Then you have another one that you use for your personal stuff, and then another one that you use for your work stuff. And that's fun, and that works. And the system they put together of kind of masking that these are all separate, that all these containers are separate virtual machines, works exceptionally well. Because they all show up in the same desktop, just as, you know, if I run Firefox from one VM or another, it just runs as though it's Firefox on the desktop. And the only difference is that it puts a border around it of whatever color. So, like, my personal one is yellow. So if I run my personal Firefox, it comes up with a yellow border. If I run my work one, it comes up with a blue border. And so you can tell what's what. But here's the really interesting part. Because it uses VMs as a virtual router, basically, it comes with Hunix installed. Hunix is kind of like a more advanced version of Tails. It's a Linux distro that's meant to be set up as both a desktop and a server. So the server connects to Tor, and then the client connects to the server, so that anything you do on the client has to go through Tor. It has no routing to the clear net, you know what I mean? Am I doing a good job of explaining this? I'm not sure.
Yeah, man.
So, pretty much your computer is not a computer. With cubes, you're like running a virtual network. And it's running all these VMs. And I've had a few hiccups with it. For example, just putting a different picture as my wallpaper. Getting it on there basically involved using a flash drive because I couldn't save it from a web browser to the DOM 0, which sounds annoying, but is actually extremely smart. Because if I go to a website with a drive-by download and tries to install some malware, I can just reboot the VM, and it's gone.
Yeah.
I don't even have to restart the whole damn computer. I basically close the web browser, restart the VM and the little interface, and it's gone. And moreover, if I was smart and not using the web browser out of a VM that had important shit in it, you know, if it was just my stuff, I don't even have to worry about it having possibly touched work documents or, you know, coding projects. Because kind of what I'm working on right now is setting up a programming template, a VM template, that's got, you know, my IDEs and coding tools and all that shit already installed in it, with the idea that I could spin up multiple VMs per project. So I, you know, want to start, say, a new project for Galaxy 15, I would just make a VM, call it that project name, and it would keep all of the files for that one project separate as its own environment. So that, but I could spin up as many of these copies as I want, because it does some really smart things with the way it does disk images and space. So one of the reasons it uses these template VMs is so that you don't have, because like I said, it runs like four VMs when you start it up. You don't have four full installs of Fedora. You have one. And it's using templates to make four different VMs off the one image. So it's not wasting a whole ton of hard drive space. So it's annoyingly secure because it actually makes it difficult to do some things. But the more I'm messing with it, the more I really like it. And plus the idea that if you go setting up a VM just for Tor stuff, and you have and you know because of the way the routing in it works that there's absolutely no way for your traffic to go out of Tor, that's kind of fun to play with. Again, it's fun. You know, am I really worried about my traffic doing that? No, of course not. But you know, this kind of system. Now, I know you say not to give them the tips, but if you're going to a website that's being run by the FBI, this would have defeated their malware.
Yeah.
So, but well, I can't say that actually because I don't know what kind of malware they used. If it ran in the browser, it may not have.
That's right. But, they didn't tell us, did they?
No. There are kinds of malware that would have defeated and kinds that wouldn't have. I guess it would depend on what it did. If it was running out of the browser and somehow inducing it to make a ClearNet connection, the Hunix setup would prevent it from making that ClearNet connection. It'd still go out over Tor. But and if it was any kind of full-on tool installed deep into the system, a reboot of that VM would make it go away. It also has the concept of disposable VMs. So it has a template. It copies up, whenever you run the program, it copies it up, and it doesn't even save anything. It doesn't give it that little 10 gig, or it's not even 10 gig, it's like 2 gig. By default, you can change it. Image file to save your personal shit in. It's just gone when you close it. So if you just need like a quick disposable thing to go check a bad guy website, or somebody sent you a file they want you to look at, you can look at it in a disposable VM and not even have to worry about it doing things. You can also assign custom firewall rules to each virtual machine. So if I was doing something and I wanted to be certain that it couldn't talk to the internet, you can just go turn the internet connection for that application off. So
that's cool.
About the only thing you're not going to be able to do on this, because I haven't tried it yet, but you can apparently put together a Windows template and actually have Windows applications in the same sandboxing setup as the Linux stuff. I haven't got that far with it yet, but about the only thing you're not really going to be able to do with it is play games. Because
does it do like Wine to do the Windows stuff?
You could do Wine, yes. But you could just run a Windows VM. So if you had a program that didn't work right. But yeah, it's the 3D stuff isn't going to work because of all the hackery they're doing to make the X display work. So no gaming on it, but that's okay. Because my second thing for Digital Dojo tonight is from opensource.com, 7 terminal command line based games for Linux. So you can get some gaming in on Linux if you're stuck on the command line. And it's links to get them all installed, mostly from GitHub. But it's got a version of 2048 in the command line. It's got several BSD games, Moon Buggy, which looks like a, I don't know what that is. NetHack, something that looks like it might be Snake. Of course, NetHack is like the first version of Diablo. Nodoku, which is basically Space Invaders. Or no, that's In Invaders is Space Invaders. Nodoku is Sudoku. And there's a few others on here, but it's a list of console games for Linux.
In Invaders looks good.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, if you're on a server over an SSH session and you're just dying to get some gaming in, or the only device you have is a, I don't know.
Well, you just want to impress your work colleagues.
Yeah, there you go. So.
Yeah, I bet you I can play games in the command line.
Actually, you know what? Cycros makes a good point. Dwarf Fortress is not in this list. But, the comments are full of even more. So, yeah. Anyways. That's all I've really got for tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure Decking is every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site. The subreddit. One of these days I'll get around to fixing the feedback form. I don't know. You guys have anything before I close out the show?
Not pretty good.
At least I have chicken?